My name is Lee Whittinghill. I am now at Kentucky State University. I did a postdoc at Columbia University in New York City and was able to work with a lot of rooftop farmers during that time. And I learned some important lessons, I think, that we need to take and look at other urban agricultural systems that are in use to see if some of the same issues exist. And one of those big issues that I was looking at was nutrient runoff and how that relates to nutrient management. So for any of you in the audience who don't know, a green roof is a type of roofing technology that enables the growth of vegetation on rooftops. And these usually employ an engineered media that's mostly heat expanded slate or shale. So low organic matter content, low exchange capacity. They can be constructed to hold all manner of plants, including trees, provided that your building underlying roof structure can support that, and that your budget for building the roof can support it. More recently, they're being used to produce vegetable crops. This is an example of an open row agriculture system used on Eagle Street Farm in New York City. There are also a wide variety of container production systems in use, from commercially obtained green roof modular systems to styrofoam shipping containers that are being repurposed from a restaurant. You can kind of see that there on the left. So one of the farms that I worked at more closely, we did a couple of research projects on their farm monitoring both runoff quality and runoff quantity, and I'll be talking tomorrow afternoon about the runoff quantity portion of that research. So one of the things that I looked at was, what are they putting on the roof, and how does that relate to nutrient recommendations and what we're seeing coming off the roof in the runoff? And so this research actually went from 2013 to 2014, but you'll notice that the nutrient sources are for 2012. How many of you work with farmers? How many of you work with farmers or growers, I mean, we're horticulturists here, who monitor and keep records of their nutrient management practices? Okay, so there's a couple fewer hands. Something that I have noticed in this work, especially with the rooftop growers in urban settings, is that they aren't keeping records. And so they had to go back and say, well, what did we have on the books for the last year that we have the information? And some of this, I think, may be because they're coming from a background that isn't strictly farming or horticultural. So they don't come up learning about using checkbook methods and figuring out what the crops need and making sure they're only applying that. So this farm that I did this research on was using organic practices, although they were not certified, much like aquaponics. Certifying a rooftop production system as organic is problematic, mostly because the engineered media can't necessarily be certified organic, and even if it could, the production process for that is often counter to many of the other principles of sustainable agriculture. So they put a lot of compost on the roof and use a variety of other organic amendments. From that estimate of what they put on the roof, I calculated application rates and compared those to what's recommended for ornamental green roofs and what was recommended by Cornell University for ground-level market garden production. As you can see, the nutrient management, they appear to be a little bit low compared to market gardens, but for potassium especially, they were very high, even higher than levels recommended for building up soil levels. And some of that goes back to what they were putting on there. So they were putting on, their nutrient sources were much heavier in potassium than maybe they could have been. And this related to runoff. So for runoff, the nitrate and ammonia levels were very different. We saw higher nitrate levels than other green roofs and non-vegetative roofs, and those were higher than some of the EPA guidelines that I could find for fresh water quality, but not as high as the drinking water benchmark. So drinking water can have as much as 10 milligrams per liter of nitrate in it. The ammonia was much lower and below guidelines. Potassium and phosphorus were also higher than ornamental green roofs. And I should add that ornamental green roofs often receive very little fertilizer, if any, depending on what plant life they're using. The green roofs we were comparing them to were had very low maintenance and were mostly comprised of sedum. So again, the phosphorus, The potassium levels were higher than EPA guidelines for fresh water, but not at the benchmark, higher than the benchmark level for runoff in some industrial systems. The phosphorus levels were within the range. I keep switching these up. No, that was right. Sorry. Phosphorus levels were within the range reported in the literature for other green roofs, including roofs with much more highly managed ornamental systems, but the potassium levels were higher. So the dotted line that you can see on the left-hand graph, it represents the range of values reported in the green roof literature. So this was sort of a lesson in, okay, they're not following a recommendation, they're sort of applying nutrients. Maybe they're following the recommendation, the recommended nutrient application rate on the back of the fertilizers that they're using. But since they're combining so many different types of fertilizers, they may be sort of losing track of what they're actually applying. And I think many ground-level urban systems are similar to green roofs in that they are separated from the ground soil system. In many cases, this is mandated because urban soils can be highly polluted, especially with heavy metals, solvents, and other toxic materials. So the two systems on the right, the container and raised bed production systems, may be completely separated from the ground level. And so anything that leaves that container could be considered runoff. This is sort of a graphic I came up with for a recent job interview. You can kind of see on the left is the green roof. It's made up of the vegetation on the top. The sort of dark or the orange color is the green roof media, and then there's a drainage layer. Anything leaving that roof ends up in the stormwater system and more directly and can impact downstream stormwater quality. In a ground-level urban system, you may have some disconnect from the ground if you have a container or a raised bed where there's a barrier. But the runoff can still interact with the soil water and the groundwater depending on your infiltration rates and the properties of the soil there. But runoff can still be a problem, and in an urban setting, usually that runoff, even if it's surface runoff to start with, will end up in the stormwater system and therefore downstream. So one of the biggest questions I started to ask was, are these ground-level urban growers similar to the green roof urban grower that I had the most experience with? And are they, how are they managing their nutrients with a mind to, yes, get fruits and vegetables out of their system, but are they bearing in mind that they don't want to have extra nutrient leaching? And I think in some cases, or many cases, a lot of urban growers are, again, not coming from a horticultural or farming background. They may be hobbyists or coming from another discipline. There are also a wide variety of urban growers who are from immigrant or refugee communities who are using traditional knowledge from their home country. And in order to really get an idea of if this runoff could present a problem ecologically, or down the line in terms of policy. So much of this is still under the radar for policy. But if something happened and it got out that we're flushing all these nutrients through our urban growing systems and it's contributing to eutrophication downstream, especially in areas like the Chesapeake Bay where it's a huge concern, the policy will follow And I think we have a good opportunity to be ahead of the policy here if we can get the science there and develop recommendations to prevent that runoff. So one of the things, the projects that I'm taking on next at Kentucky State is finding out from the urban growers in central Kentucky what their practices are. Are they keeping records of what they're putting in there? How much are they putting in there? Are they following some guideline or from a university or extension service, or are they just looking at the back of the fertilizer package? And it can really matter where you get your information from. So I have in this graph here two recommendations from the backs of different fertilizers. I believe the one, I guess, to your left is an organic. None of them are organic fertilizers, but there's two different conventional fertilizers, and there were recommendations for application from the back of the packages. And that calculated out in how much nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium would be applied based on that recommendation rate. The following two columns are the home vegetable garden recommendation from University of Kentucky, so for central Kentucky, and then the market garden recommendation from Michigan State. You can see that all of those numbers are extremely different from each other. Some of that, the difference between the Michigan and Kentucky recommendations, some of that could be accounted for in differences in climate and native soil types. For the fertilizer packages, it makes a huge difference what their intended plant community is. So you can go to a garden center or even Home Depot and find fertilizer specific to roses or vegetable gardens or different types of trees, some that are acidifying for azaleas. But generally, their recommendations for how much you're supposed to put on there are, again, very general. They don't tell you, well, if you have tomatoes, you should put this, but if you have green beans, put a different rate. And that's kind of what I took a look at here, is that for the Kentucky State and Michigan State recommendations, and compared those to plant nutrient needs, again, based on Michigan State and Kentucky State materials. So the number on the your left-hand side of the slash is the Kentucky State value. The number on the right is the Michigan State value. So again, those are very different, but you can kind of see that for phosphorus, for example, the Kentucky State value for a home vegetable garden doesn't meet the requirements for tomatoes or cucumbers, but would be a significant over-application for beans. And if you have a mixed plot, some of that might be okay. The tomatoes are going to take up a little bit more. The beans won't miss it. But that's really going to depend on what you're applying. So one of my big questions is, again, how does this match up with what farmers are actually doing? How big are their plots? And are they applying the same for all of their vegetables? Or how much management do they do in terms of, well, this part of my quarter acre gets this much, this other part has different plants and is going to get a different amount. The second part of the research I hope to be starting very soon is going to be looking at taking those management practices that urban farmers are actually using and applying them in a controlled experiment to find out what the runoff is. So I'll be setting up both container gardens and raised beds that we can collect all of the runoff from and test it for these water quality metrics. To see not only if there is a leaching problem from some of those management systems, but then taking those and seeing if we can come up with improved practices to recommend to the urban growers that may not only prevent leaching, but any nutrients that they apply that leach out, they've paid for. And many of these urban farmers don't have very large budgets that they're working with, and anything that they put toward nutrients for their production is something that they can't then put towards something else like more seed or even school programs for their kids. something like that, because many of these are hobbyists. And I'm out of time, but that is my last slide. So are there any questions? Yes. So this data was taken, we sampled, it was at least once a month we went up and sampled after, or sort of during a storm, and then these box plots represent the sum total of that sampling, so it would be, no, it's, we could not get first flush. Our study site was more than 40 minutes by subway and at least 20 minutes by car from our office location. So these are sort of snapshots at a point during the storm. In the paper, we do look at some issues of nutrient loading over the course of a year based on averages that we gathered from this data and average stormwater retention. So I know of two roofs that are part of the Brooklyn Grange operating system and Eagle Street that run into the sewer. There are a number of greenhouse operations that may or may not be hydroponic, and I am not sure if they're recirculating or not. It goes into the sewer system, yes. One of the questions that we had was, I haven't repeated the questions. So the question was, if it's going into the stormwater system, why do we worry about it? Or the sewage system. It. Well, okay, sorry. I misinterpreted your question. So the runoff water from these roofs goes into the stormwater system. So in most of the time, especially in New York City, a storm will result in a combined sewer overflow, and that's a problem. But one of the questions that we have sort of also, at least I do in the back of my mind, is if we really got more of these farms going, would the sum of their leaching create a problem?
Maybe we can discuss later and give a big applause to